All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prashtaya Bhutana, Sri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami, Jinnamani. Namaste, Sarasvati Deve, Gauravani Pachani, Namaste, Sisimivani Paskutyade, Satani. Mandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta, Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavam Sri Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana, Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvadutam, Padujana Sahita, Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Shri Radha Krishna Puram Sahagana Lavita Shri Vishakam Tamsha Panchakapa Chukascha Kitasindhi Vitapa Dijanam Pavanevya Vaishnava Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya April 7, 2019, in Auckland, New Zealand. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 15, Description of the Kingdom of God, Text 41 and 42. Vijukshipanma kadakundala mandararha Gandastalona samukam mahima kiritam Dordanda sakshanda vivare harata paradya Harena kandaragatena chakostubena Vidyut, lightning, Shipat, outshining, Makara, alligator-shaped, Kundala, earrings, Mandana, decoration, Arha, as it fits, Gandastala, cheeks, Unnasa, prominent nose, Mukham, countenance, Manimat, gem-studded, kiritam, crown, dhodanda, of his four stout arms, shanda, group, vivare, between, harita, charming, para ardhya, by the most precious, parena, necklace, gandhara gatena, adorning his neck, cha, and kostubhena, by the kostubha jewel. Srila Prabhupada's translation. His countenance was distinguished by cheeks that enhanced the beauty of his alligator-shaped pendants, which outshone lightning. His nose was prominent, and his head was covered with a gem-studded crown. A charming necklace hung between his stout arms, and his neck was adorned with a gem known by the name Kostubha. So this word Makara doesn't have an English translation, and therefore Prabhupada sometimes translates it, like he does here, translates it as alligator, and other places he translates it as sharks, and other places as another one that he gives. Dolphins. So he sometimes translates Makara as an alligator, sometimes as a shark, and sometimes as a dolphin. Have you ever wondered about that? So a Makara is neither of those, or none of those. It's not an entity that we see on this planet. If it does live here, it's so deep that we haven't found it. But it's a combination of different creatures. So it's a water creature, but it's like a bunch of creatures put together. It's the carrier of Ganga. I know sometimes Ganga is shown on a crocodile, but actually Ganga rides on a Makara. It's the Vedic astrological sign for Capricorn. It's also the carrier of Cupid. So it's not really a fish, it's not really a dolphin, it's not really an alligator, it's not really a shark, it's another creature altogether. This is your homework, home fun assignment, to go look up what is a Makara. So you can meditate on Krishna's earrings and There is one devotee in Radhadesh who actually had makara-shaped earrings made for Gopinath. Small makara-shaped earrings. And the Kastuba gem is an interesting one of Krishna's ornaments. It's one of the two characteristics that distinguishes the Lord immediately and visually from the residents of Vaikuntha, who have the liberation of Swarupya Mukti, who look just like the Lord. So we know when Gopu Kumar went to Vaikuntha, as described by Sanatana Goswami, so he saw the gatekeepers, and he says, Om Namo Narayanaya. And they said, no, we're not Narayan. We're just servants. Okay. Then he came to the next gate. Again he saw the residents of Vaikuntha, who looked just like Narayan. Oh, Narayana, my lord! No, we're just servants. So finally, the chief of the servants spoke to Gopal Kumar and said, look, this is how you tell who's actually Narayana. He has two things, two characteristics that nobody else has. One is the Kastuba jewel, and the other is Srivatsa, the mark of Lakshmi Devi on his chest. So the Kastuba jewel, it's engraved. What shape is engraved in the Kastuba jewel? A calf. A little calf engraved in the Kastuba jewel. And who's there in the Kastuba jewel? This is a really interesting question. Yes, us. Who said that? Very good. If there's maha sweets, you should get one. Yes, we are all living entities are resting in the Kastuba jewel. So Krishna's keeping all of us right next to his heart. So we're riding around with him in the Kastuba jewel. So, you know, in every religion, there's some talk about loving God. But it's very difficult to love God if you don't know anything about him. If you just think that he's some, you know, pillar of smoke, pillar of fire or something like that, it's a little difficult. But we can actually meditate on these descriptions. And in fact, later on here in the third canto, Lord Kapiladev is going to be suggesting that we meditate on each of the features of the Lord and going through each of these personal features. So when we read these verses, it shouldn't be just like, oh yeah, he's got Al-Nashayim. But this should be the basis of our meditation on. Of course, we have the deity form, so many paintings also that we can meditate on. We say we should always think of Krishna. So here's the guidance for thinking of Krishna, that his cheeks make his makara earrings look more beautiful. Right? Generally, our earrings make our cheeks look more beautiful, but his cheeks make his earrings look more beautiful. And he has this Kastuba jewel, and he has this garland, and he has a noticeable nose, a gem-studded crown. Okay, as there's no purport, we're going to go on to text 42. Srila Prabhupada's translation. The exquisite beauty of Narayana, being many times magnified by the intelligence of his devotees, was so attractive that it defeated the pride of the goddess of fortune in being the most beautiful. My dear demigods, the Lord who thus manifested himself is worshipable by me, by Lord Shiva, and by all of you. Who's speaking these verses? Lord Brahma is. The sages regarded him, who are the sages? The four Kumars. The sages regarded him with unsated eyes and joyously bowed their heads at his lotus feet. Unsated eyes. So they never got tired of looking at the Lord. With material beauty we get tired, yeah? Even the magazines that are all about beautiful people, they don't have exactly the same person on the cover of the magazine all the time. Isn't it? Every time they have a different beautiful person. One will become tired. Yes? You're looking at a beautiful mountain with the sunrise. You're not going to look at it all day and all night and all day and all night. Eventually we want to look at something else. But the Lord is so beautiful that one can just look at him all the time. And who complained about their inability to look at the Lord all the time? The gopis, and what did they complain about as far as obstructing them? The eyelids. So when I'm looking at all of you, I actually have no awareness of the fact that I'm blinking. I'm not consciously aware that my blinking is obstructing my vision of all of you. Even though you are all very beautiful and I would like to look at all of you forever, but I don't have that awareness. But with the gopis, when they're looking at Krishna, they are very aware that even for just a moment, their eyes are blinking. They envy the demigods. The demigods don't blink their eyes. They have some way of lubricating their eyes without blinking. They're like, why did Lord Brahma make us human beings with blinking eyes? So Srila Prabhupada's purport, the beauty of the Lord was so enchanting that it could not be sufficiently described. The goddess of fortune is supposed to be the most beautiful sight within the spiritual and material creations of the Lord. So we could attest to that, yes? That even in this world, the ultimate form of beauty tends to be woman rather than man. And the goddess of fortune, that is who everybody is worshipping in this world, isn't it? Everybody wants prosperity of various kinds. She represents all six kinds of prosperity. She has a sense of being the most beautiful, yet her beauty was defeated when the Lord appeared. So that's also interesting. So Lakshmi Devi has a sense, I am the most beautiful. But that becomes defeated. In other words, the beauty of the goddess of fortune is secondary in the presence of the Lord. In the words of Vaishnava poets, it is said that the Lord's beauty is so enchanting that it defeats hundreds of thousands of cupids. So of course, that's how Prabhupada said we conquer lust, is we get attracted to the form of the Lord. He is therefore called Madana Mohan. It is also described that the Lord sometimes becomes mad after the beauty of Radharani. Poets describe that under those circumstances, although the Lord is Madan Mohan, he becomes Madana Daha, or enchanted by the beauty of Radharani. So I remember a discussion once between learned devotees where they were saying, how is it fair that we, the parts of the Lord, can fall, but the Lord never falls? And the devotee said, no, the Lord falls in love with Radharani. So, you know, in this world, when somebody falls in love, in romantic love, and I think it happens more men to women than women to men. Yes? Would you agree? Men are more attracted to women than women are to men? Huh? So, a person loses their intelligence. Yes? Everybody knows this? Does everybody know this? If you don't know this, it's something that you should learn. That when a person becomes romantically attracted, that they lose their intelligence. They fall from their intelligence. I was just reading of some experiments done with men because they were easier to experiment on, where they had the men guess what kind of decisions they would make when they were sexually aroused. And then they actually had them become aroused and ask them the exact same questions. And by a huge margin, when the men were actually agitated, the decisions they made were much more stupid. They were willing to do risky behavior, immoral behavior, all kinds of peculiar behavior, once their bodies and minds were agitated. Basically, they fell from their intelligence. And what was really interesting was that all these same people, when they were asked to guess what they would do in that state, and presumably they had much experience of being in that state, they still could not guess what they would do. So, of course, we become bewildered by any strong emotion, and we'll talk about that actually tomorrow. We can become bewildered by any of our senses or any strong emotion, but this one particularly messes people up. Isn't that a fact? Under the sway of that particular desire, that particular emotion, people will commit murder. Yes. I think half of all murders occurs between romantic partners. So, yes. So it is a state of madness. It is called madana, means madness, actually. Not one. But it's very pleasurable to become mad in romantic love, isn't it? Yes? Yes? No? People are just like, we don't want to talk about this at all. Especially the guys are just like, we're not talking about this. If it wasn't pleasurable to lose your sense in romantic love, it wouldn't be driving the world. And because of that, Krishna also enjoys this. Krishna also likes losing it and just running madly after Srimati Radharani without any other consideration. This is his highest enjoyment, to become mad after his devotees. And in fact, this is kind of the theme of this particular purport, how the Lord is madly in love with his devotees, so much so that he'll say, apichet sucharacharo. Even if my devotee does something terrible, they're still wonderful. That's how we feel when we're in love with somebody also, correct? So although he's Madan Mohana, he bewilders Cupid, he becomes Madanadatta, or enchanted by the beauty of Radharani. Actually, the Lord's beauty is super excellent, surpassing even the beauty of Lakshmi and Vaikuntha. The devotees of the Lord in the Vaikuntha planets want to see the Lord as the most beautiful, but the devotees in Gokula or Krishna Loka want to see Radharani as more beautiful than Krishna. I've always thought that sentence in this purport is very interesting. So the devotees in Vaikuntha, they're seeing the Lord more as regal. Yes? Well, when we say that Krishna is the highest manifestation of God, that is because we're defining God. Our definition of God is Akhila Rasa Ritamurti. He is the form of all relationships, of all tastes, including the very intimate ones. So we see Krishna as supreme precisely because he comes under the control of his devotees and precisely because he forgets his God nature when he becomes attracted to Radharani or when Mother Yasoda threatens to tie him up. He forgets. And we say, this is the highest manifestation of God. But the residents of Vaikuntha, their mood is the highest manifestation of God, is that form which is most godlike. They're using a different definition. Everybody follow? So they don't want to see Narayan as being bewildered by Lakshmi. They want to see Narayan as being the master of Lakshmi. Does that make sense to them? Yeah? They want to see him as always being in control and always being the supreme controller. Whereas the devotees in Goloka, they like to see that Krishna is not acting as a supreme controller, that he's like, Radharani won't talk to me today, what am I going to do? You know, my mother's running after me with a stick and he's crying and he's rubbing his eyes. Mommy's going to tie me up. My friends won't play with me anymore if I go home. So this is the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. They want to see the Lord in a different way. Going on, the adjustment is that the Lord, being Bhakta Vatsala, or one who wants to please his devotees, assumes such features so that devotees like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and other demigods may be pleased. Here also, for the devotee sages, the Kumaras, the Lord appeared in his most beautiful feature, and they continued to see him without satiation and wanted to continue seeing him more and more. The exquisite beauty of Narayana, being many times magnified by the intelligence of his devotees, was so attractive that it defeated the pride of the goddess of fortune in being the most beautiful. My dear demigods, the Lord who thus manifested himself is worshipable by me, by Lord Shiva, and by all of you. The sages regarded him with unsated eyes and joyously bowed their heads at his lotus feet. So, here we're seeing the different moods of the Lord in different parts of the spiritual world to please his different devotees. He appears, and Lord Kapiladev says this again later on in this canto, that the Lord assumes whatever form the devotees want to worship him in. However you want to see the Lord assumes that form. The Acharyas say, when the Lord married 16,100 queens at one time, don't try that yourself, please, that each form of the Lord was a little different. Because each of the queens appreciated something different about him. So Sanatana Goswami, in his commentary on the 10th canto, chapter 13, he says that the Lord has unlimited qualities, there are unlimited jivas, and each jiva is attracted to a particular quality. And the particular way that each of us relates with the Lord, we feel is superior. Just like this comparison between Vaikuntha and Goloka. So if I'm really plugging Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it's because I think it's a great book, and if you haven't read it, please do yourself a favor. So when Gopal Kumar goes to Vaikuntha, as described by Sanatana Goswami in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, one of the things that really surprised me, he comes to Vaikuntha and he sees Lord Narayana, and he says, "Hey, Gopal!" And the residents of Vaikuntha became disturbed. Now, for us in 2019, here in New Zealand, we probably don't have this mood that a cowherd is something low in society, right? New Zealand has a very egalitarian mood. I mean, I'm sure people still have status and use their status to exploit others, but at least in places like New Zealand and Australia and America and Brazil, we pretend that we're very egalitarian. You know, everybody's equal, there's no different statuses and different occupations and so forth. But in many societies, saying somebody is just a shepherd or just a cowherd, you know, they're just like a village boy. If you're talking to very sophisticated, wealthy city people, you say, "You're just a village boy." It's an insult. Or you're just a cowherd. I mean, Krishna didn't even go to school until he went to Mathura. So the residents of Vaikuntha, they're worshipping the Lord as God, the Supreme, Lord of Lords, King of Kings. And here this devotee comes and says, "Oh, cowherd!" I'm like, "What are you saying? You can't call him a cowherd." Yes, he has an incarnation of a Kazakh cowherd. He does that to kill some demons. There's some demons needed to be killed, so he had to take a cowherd form to kill them. But, you know, don't talk like that now. It's just something he did, one of his pastimes. And some other residents of Vaikuntha said, "Oh, you can call the Lord by any of his names. Gopal is one of his names. You can say Gopal. That's okay." And then they had a debate, which made me very happy. I thought, "Oh, great. When I go back to Godhead, I can still debate." Satisfied. Of course, they debate properly. They don't use ad hominem and so forth. They actually follow the rules of proper debate. But the other thing that fascinated me was that the residents of Vaikuntha think that Lord Vishnu is the highest. They think Vishnu is the avatari. Krishna is an avatar. And they think Krishna is not a full manifestation of the Lord, and that Vishnu is. That's interesting, isn't it? I mean, eventually, the side that said he could call the Lord Gopal won the debate, in case you were wondering about that one. And so Gopal Kumar did get to call Lord Narayan Gopal. But definitely some of the residents there were a little uncomfortable with how Gopal Kumar was dealing with Lord Narayana. They really didn't like it very much. What they want to see is formality and grandeur. That's what they want to see. They want to see the relationship between Lakshmi and Narayan more formal. They don't want to see that. They want to see that the Lord is more beautiful than his wife. They want to see that his wife is attracted to him more than he's attracted to her. That's how they want to perceive him. So the Lord appears like that to them. And in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it's very clear that most of the residents of Vaikuntha don't even know that there's a planet of Goloka Vrindavan. Gopal Kumar is not satisfied in Vaikuntha. You know, sometimes when he sees Lord Vishnu, he actually sees him as the cowherd boy Krishna. And he sees Lakshmi as Radharani and Dharani as Chandravali. And the residents of Vaikuntha as cowherd boys. Sometimes he gets this vision. And he sees Devaki as Yasoda. Rohini stays the same though, because she's in both realms. So sometimes he gets this vision and he feels satisfied for a while, but then again he sees, oh, here's Narayana, Lakshmi, Gloria, Gloria to the Lord. And then he's sad. It's not the mood in which he wants to relate to the Lord. So Narada Muni takes him aside and says, I don't understand how here in Vaikuntha you're still not happy. Who can be in Vaikuntha and not be fully happy? How is that even possible? He says, that's because this is not your realm. This is not your place. But he tells him off to the side. He says, the residents of Vaikuntha, they don't know about Vrindavan. Why don't they know about Vrindavan? Because it would disturb their mood. Interesting, isn't it? You know, one of the many, many reasons why I'm attracted to Krishna consciousness movement and Gaudiya Vaishnavism and Bhakti Yoga philosophy is this concept that there's many levels and kinds of ultimate perfection. You know, so many of the religious systems of the world, it's kind of a one-size-fits-all. You know, if you believe in our particular prophet and our particular philosophy, and you follow our rituals, then you go to heaven, and if you don't, you go to hell. And that's kind of it. And they don't even know what goes on there if you ask them, which I have done. So what happens in heaven? What do you do there? Actually, when I was very a new member of ISKCON, and I was out distributing books at O'Hare Airport, so I remember talking with some Christians who were saying, well, we're going to heaven. Okay, cool. What are you going to do there? We will do the same thing we're doing now. And I said, would you watch television? And they were kind of, I really didn't know what to say. And I was very enthused with the fact that we actually have knowledge of what is the spiritual world and that there are levels of the spiritual world. There's innumerable spiritual planets. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains to Sanatana Goswami, and on each Vaikuntha planet, there's a somewhat different form of the Lord. There's a somewhat different atmosphere. Each Vaikuntha planet has a different atmosphere. Different people like different atmospheres, even in this world, correct? When I was working here on Learn to Read, and my oldest son lived in Hawaii, so I would sometimes travel back and forth between New Zealand and Hawaii. And I remember one time when I was coming here from there, so I was in the airport and there were some tourists that were also going from Hawaii to New Zealand. Now, by the way, it's not a very popular route. There's only one nonstop flight and it only flies twice a week. That's it. And in certain peak seasons, it flies three times a week. So it's not a popular route for people to go between Hawaii and New Zealand. So I was asking these people, why are you going to New Zealand from Hawaii? And they said, oh, because we've heard it's very beautiful. And I said, but you're already in Hawaii. But there's some kinds of beauty you'll find here that you don't find there. Yes, or I remember once when I went from Hawaii to Vancouver Island. Vancouver Island is, yes, awesome. Hawaii is gorgeous. And Vancouver Island is gorgeous. But it's a completely different kind of gorgeous. The flora and the fauna, the climate is completely different. And some people prefer to live in Canada, and some people prefer to live in Hawaii, and some people prefer to live in New Zealand. And sometimes it surprises us, isn't it, when somebody likes to live in a place that we don't like. Oh, I love that place. And you're thinking, really? Like my husband's family is from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. That's right by the Canadian border, and it's so cold there that even in the summer, at night, in the summer, it's only 1 or 2 degrees. And in the winter, there's so much snow, there's like a meter of snow on the roof, they have to shovel their roofs. You know, and sometimes they have to make tunnels through the snow. But there are people who love it up there. My sister-in-law and her husband, you know, they just do all these winter sports, and they love it there. So in this world, people like different atmospheres and different kinds of enjoyments. And that's true also of the soul. The soul is that. And even in Goloka Vrindavan, you know, there's one section of Goloka Vrindavan where Krishna's married to the gopis, yes? as described by Jiva Goswami. So there's different sections even of Goloka Vrindavan. And then people who have different relationships with the Lord. Like those who have a parental relationship with the Lord, they don't understand that Krishna is going and dancing with the gopis. When Mother Yasoda sees Krishna in the morning after he's snuck in the house from dancing and he has, you know, scratches and some of the gopis' cosmetics are on him. And she sees that and she just thinks, oh, the servants didn't bathe him properly last night. She just doesn't understand. And some of the girls are in the room giggling like young girls do. And she doesn't pick up on that because she sees Krishna differently. She sees him as her little boy. That's even true in this world. That parents see their adult children even as their children. They know that they're adults. I mean, I know my children are all adults and have children of their own, but I don't see them like that. I see them as my children. So this exists even in the spiritual world, that people see the Lord in different ways. And each of us has a different way of pleasing the Lord. And the Lord is pleased by an infinite number of types and moods of service. It's not that he's only pleased by one type and one mood of service. So this is true eternally in the spiritual world, but to an unlimited degree. To an unlimited degree. But all the devotees are attracted by Krishna. They're attracted by his form, by his jewelry, by his makara earrings, by his kostuba jewel, by his name. So some devotees may be attracted more by one name than another. Some of these residents of Vaikuntha, they're never going to sing Hey Govinda, Hey Gopal. But they still love to chant Om Namo Narayanaya, Hey Lakshmipati. So they're still attracted by the Lord's names. And the devotees can go on saying the Lord's names over and over and over without satiation. Again, we have some reflection in this world that people can do that, yes? When I was young, I remember songs like that, you know, popular songs where someone's just singing the name of somebody over and over and over. And all the devotees are attracted by the Lord's form, but the different form. Some devotees want to see the Lord as four-handed. We were just reading in New Govardhan in Australia about Bhishma passing away and how Krishna went to see him with the Pandavas. And then at the last moment, when Bhishma sees the sun passing to the north, and he says, oh, it's time. And then it says, that person who could speak on subjects with thousands of meanings and who fought on thousands of battlefields and protected thousands of men, withdrew his consciousness from all other subjects and fixed his wide open eyes on the personality of God and who is standing before him in what form? What form? Well, Parthasarathi, but he wasn't driving a chariot. In what form? Narayan. How many arms did he have? Four. Is that interesting? Do you think when the Lord came with the Pandavas that he was exhibiting four hands? No. He's there as Dwarkadi Krishna, who generally has two hands. Sometimes he displays four. What's the time in Dwarka when Krishna displayed four hands? Yes, when Rukmini fainted and he went to pick her up. And to Bhishma, as he's dying, he shows himself as four-handed as Narayana. Because that's who Bhishma wants to see. And it's interesting, Bhishma is glorifying the gopis. He's asking the gopis for their benediction. He knows about the gopis, he knows about Krishna and Vrindavan, but he's just saying, please bless me so I can focus on the Lord as Narayana. So the devotees are all attracted to the Lord's form, but they may be attracted to different forms. I mean, even in the different Vaikunthas, the Lord has his weapons in different hands. When I first read that, I was in university. It's a long story why I was reading teachings of Lord Chaitanya. But anyway, so I got to that chapter where Lord Chaitanya is telling Sanatan where the different weapons are in the Lord's hands. And I'm a very systematic kind of person. I'm sure you've all kind of noticed that. So I'm an analytic, systematic. I'm not a random, intuitive person. So my understanding was that when you read a book, you have to read it from the first page to the last page. I know not all of you read books like that, but that was my idea, that that was the right way to read a book. So, oh, a little thing I can tell you as a teacher. So I had a very systematic student, and when we would take the achievement tests, we tell the students that you don't necessarily answer the questions in order. First you do the easy ones, and you go back and do the hard ones, because they're time tests. And so if you answer the questions in order, you can get stuck on a difficult question and you don't finish the test on time. But if I said to this very systematic child, first do the easy ones and then do the hard ones, she wouldn't be able to handle that. So what I said to her was, the proper order in which you should answer the questions is, and then she was able to. So just a little note there for a teacher. But anyways, I was thinking I had to go through the book systematically. And when I got to that chapter, I also thought that I had to remember all of these. I thought, okay, I've got to remember the names of each of these Vishnu forms, and I have to remember which item is in which of their four hands. And of course, I wasn't able to do that, and so I never finished the book. I got stuck there, and I always wondered why that chapter was even there. Why was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu giving this detailed description? You know, that this form of the Lord has this name, and you've got a kanksha in the right upper hand, and a mason in the bottom right hand. And why is he even doing that? And then very recently, one of my very good friends who lives in Vrindavan said to me, he's meditating on the beauty of the Lord's arms in each of his different manifestations. So all the devotees are meditating on the beauty of the Lord's arms, the beauty of the Lord's weapons. Like we were reading yesterday, how the Lord's twirling a lotus flower, though we didn't get to talk about the lotus flower. So all the devotees, they're meditating on the beauty of the lotus flower. It's a person, you know, it's not just a flower. Would that be nice to be that flower? Krishna's carrying you around all the time, twirling you and benedicting devotees with you. Wouldn't that be nice? Krishna takes you and touches you to devotees' heads and blesses them. That's a person. And the Lord Sudarshan Chakra, right, we have the Sudarshan Chakras at the tops of the temples. And do we have Sudarshan here with Jagannath? Is he there? Or we don't have Sudarshan? Is he here? Who's at Jagannath Puchari? I don't see him there. So many times when we worship Jagannath, we also have a Sudarshan. Yes? The devotees are in our farm in Hungary. We have actually a deity of Sudarshan, and Shalagrams of Sudarshan. So the Sudarshan just is very beautiful. There's all these prayers in the Bhagavatam for Sudarshan. Sudarshan and Mastugam Sahasra Chitapya. Sarvastim Gati Rupaya Sastri Puya Vidaspate Chakram Ventano Tigri Bhavat Sabata Pandapri Sandandagi and Dagi Ari Sandamashu Kaksham Tavata Sakam Chasha and many, many more. And then there's the club Komodakai, which sometimes is smeared with the blood of the demons. So if you're really into the ghastly rasa, you can meditate on the Lord's club. But it's also a person, Komodakai is a person. Be an interesting service to have, right? You're there with demon blood on you. So generally the devotees in Vrindavan, they're not so much meditating on Krishna's club with the demon blood on it. But Sudarshan is also in Vrindavan. In the Govardhan Leela, Sudarshan is drying up the water as Krishna's lifting Govardhan here. Devotees in different moods, they may meditate on different aspects of Krishna's personality, different aspects of his form. But everyone is attracted to meditating on Krishna's form. And then Krishna is also attracted by the devotees. They're reading about how Krishna's attracted by Radharani, but Krishna's attracted by all the devotees. Krishna's attracted by us. It's not that Krishna's only attracted by Radharani and he doesn't care about any of us. So once when I was speaking in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, so there was a woman there who had a very little baby, a new baby. She's, what, 3 months? So this baby, I think, was 1 month. So she was holding her baby, and the whole class, the entire class, she was looking at her baby's toes. The entire class. She was fascinated by her baby's toes. So Krishna's fascinated by us. By each of us. He finds each of us fascinating. I mean, we often find even very insignificant creatures fascinating. Have you ever been fascinated by a little bug? So Krishna's interested in all of us. In fact, I hate to say this, but he's the only one who's really, really interested in all of us. So I hate to break it to you, but he's actually more interested in us than we're interested in us. I mean, I keep a journal, but I only occasionally do I go back and read parts of it. And I don't journal every day. But Krishna's making note of what I think and what I do at every moment. He has a record of everything I've ever thought and everything I've ever done for all of my lifetimes, for all of eternity. And he's interested. Try to find somebody like that in this world, you know, good luck. Even your mother, even, you know, your husband, your wife, your kids. How many people, you know, if you say, okay, I'm going to give you a minute-by-minute description of what I did yesterday, people will be like... I mean, how long can we listen to somebody else's stories before your mind just starts wandering unless they're a really, really, really interesting person? Right? I mean, that's the reality. But Krishna's interested in us. He finds us fascinating. He's always with us. And he's attracted by us. And especially when we relate with him in love and devotion, he wants to be with us. In fact, Prabhupada often says that he wants us to come home much more than we want to come home. That every one step we take towards him, he takes 10 steps towards us. So how interesting. Although he's the all-attractive, he's attracted to us. He wants our company. He wants our association. He wants us to be happy. I know, here I go again with Brihad Bhagavad Tamrita. And I didn't just like read it yesterday, so you might think I just put the book down. When Gopakumar goes to Vaikuntha, that's his first stop in the spiritual world, and Lord Vishnu sees him. He says, "You finally come." And he embraces him, and he said, "Life after life after life, I was dancing like a fool, wondering when you would come. And by the laws of karma, I couldn't do anything to bring you here." He said, "In no life did you ever say my name one time. You never did any service. You never did anything to come towards me. And I didn't want to break my universal laws, but I wanted to bring you home. And I didn't know what to do. So then I decided, oh, I could have him take birth in Govardhan." Which answered a lot of questions for me about the character of some of the people who take birth in Vrindavan, by the way. Sometimes we think that they're the most pious and the most devoted, but they may be the least devoted. And Krishna gives them the opportunity of that birth as a way of getting Ajata Sukriti. He said, "I had you take birth in Govardhan, and from there I could gradually bring you to me." So Krishna is anxious for us. Krishna is attracted to his devotees. Krishna's actually mad in love after his devotees. So this is the nature of Krishna. So our being in the Krishna consciousness movement should not be just a matter of intellectual conviction of the philosophy. That's very nice and it's very important. It's not that it's not important. But that's not sufficient. It's necessary but not sufficient. What we need to do beyond that is actually live the philosophy. And living the philosophy doesn't just mean physically going through the motions of bhakti, but it also means mentally, emotionally, going through the motions of bhakti. It means cultivating the emotional side of bhakti, the desire side of bhakti, the attracted side of bhakti, actually becoming attracted to Krishna. And if we don't do that, then in Manashiksha, in his commentary in text 7, Bhaktivinoda says it's a kind of bathing in donkey urine where you think you're getting clean, but actually you're just becoming stinky and itchy and burning. So if we just stay on the philosophical intellectual platform, and we just stay on the mechanical platform, and we don't allow ourselves to be attracted by the Lord, then we don't really become purified. And here's our example. Who is a greater philosopher and sage than the four Kumaras? They are Jnanis. They are the top Jnanis. And here they're allowing themselves to become attracted to the Lord. And we'll see this further tomorrow, very famous verse tomorrow. We see how they're allowing themselves to just see the Lord without satiation. And they're starting here to actually go above just intellect and just liberation and just peace and fall in love with the Lord. So thank you very much. And I'm glad that everybody here knew about the strange idea with changing time that the temple had. I thought I could trick my phone and put it on airplane mode and then it would wake me up at the time for the temple. It wouldn't switch. But that didn't work. So just to let you know that putting your phone on airplane mode does not disable the fact that it knows when a country goes in and out of daylight savings times. So, yes, that's what happened to me this morning. So I was wondering if anybody would show up at the right time. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Yes, please.
You're talking about how we have all varying spiritual world has different flavors and people have different methods of attraction, not methods, but perspectives and attached in various ways. Now this world we live here, especially as devotees, we are confronted with very differing perspectives and we seek to find validation at times for our approach. Sometimes we struggle finding that confidence and that approval that our approach to Krishna is valid and that we're equally entitled to a relationship with the Lord in a unique way. But sometimes within our society it seems that things seem to be set in a particular mode, and that's the way that things are done, and everything that's spoken to you tends to speak in opposition to the fact that you have that approach yourself. How do you deal with
that? Well, Prabhupada wrote in that letter, we want our members to be independently thoughtful, so forget the centralization and bureaucracy. And whenever we move towards centralization and bureaucracy, we squelch this individual, spontaneous, and voluntary nature of Krishna consciousness. So these were things that Srila Prabhupada warned us about. There's a number of things that he said that could destroy our movement. It wouldn't destroy Mahaprabhu's movement, but they would destroy our society. One of them is to take the deity worship as a burden. Another is to be full of personal ambition. There's a number of different ways that Prabhupada said to stop preaching that would destroy our movement. But one of them is centralization and bureaucracy. Now, Prabhupada wrote a letter. He said, my own godbrothers, I hope I'm getting this right, gave me only depression, compression, and repression. I hope I got those three right. I know one of them was compression. He said, but I was not a man to become discouraged. So I think it's typical. If you study organizational culture and organizational structure, as I have, so there's a tendency for any organization over time to go towards the bureaucratic. It's kind of a law of entropy, you could say, for organizations. So it is a very strong tendency, and it's something that any of us in a leadership position should be aware of and to try to go in the other direction. to try to go have the form more of an adhocracy rather than a bureaucracy, a more brahminical structure for our organization. But at the same time, we as individuals, like Prabhupada told to Jamuna, he said, you know, if you have association of one other person, if there's two people that are compatible, that's devotee association. If you have 200 who are not compatible, nobody makes any advancement. So we are told by all of our acharyas that we should choose compatible association. So even within the Hare Krishna movement, we should feel joy at seeing any Vaishnava. We should respect all Vaishnavas, we should encourage all Vaishnavas, but in our own life, we need our intimate people should be people who are compatible. Now, of course, if we have some opinion that's against the process, if you want to invent a new process, that's a problem. And, you know, it's the responsibility, particularly of the GBC, to make sure that people don't invent new processes of bhakti. That's something important. But within that, Prabhupada said Krishna is not narrow or stereotyped. Within that, there's frankly an infinite number of ways to express Krishna consciousness. There must be. That is our philosophy. That is, we are personalists. We are not impersonalists. Anyone who tries to have a same size fits all is pushing us toward the Brahmajyoti, not towards Goloka Vrindavan. So therefore, Prabhupada said every year the GBC should talk about unity and diversity. And we should be careful, apavan manate jagat. We tend to think, however I see things, is the right way. And no matter how much intellectually we understand that that couldn't possibly be true, emotionally we still tend to think like that. Emotionally we have a really, really, really hard time understanding that somebody can think radically different than I do and have a radically different opinion and we can both be right. It's a very, very hard thing for us to do. Prabhupada talked about political parties, the different political parties in a country. Each have a different way of serving the country, but they're all united in serving the country. But even in Vaikuntha, they argue about these things. Don't think that when you go back to Godhead, that everybody's going to be supporting your particular way of serving Krishna. That will not happen. You know, everyone there will appreciate that you're serving Krishna. Nobody will be envious of you. But there are some people who are in the spiritual world who are going to think that your mood of serving the Lord is inferior. That's not going to go away. So if we're looking for, you know, getting validation from everybody, good luck with that. That's not going to happen even in the ultimate spiritual reality. It's just not. So therefore, even in Goloka Vrindavan, there's groups of devotees. You know, there's all these different planets. It's so extreme in some cases, it's a different planet. You know, you're on a different planet, and you're not into how the Lord is being worshipped in that planet, because you wouldn't like it. You'd be uncomfortable with it. Like Hanuman doesn't really want to go to Dwarka. He says, if my Lord calls me, then I'll go, but he's not comfortable there. It's not the way in which he wants to see the Lord. And others are not comfortable with Ram. You know, what's this? He's dropping off his wife pregnant with twins in the forest. She already had a trial and she was innocent. And it's just some rumor on the basis of a rumor. And others are like, my Lord is so fixed with Dharma that even on the basis of a rumor, he will sacrifice his pregnant wife for the sake of Dharma. How glorious is my Lord? And others are like, what are you doing? You know, the gopis criticize Ramchandra. Yes? They criticize Vamadeva. You know this, right? In Prabhupada's books, that the gopis say, Vamadeva, you know, they say, this Krishna, he was not only a rascal in this life, he was a rascal in his other lifetimes. He cheated Bali, tied him up, shot the other Bali Ram Lila from behind a tree, didn't accept Sherpanika. The gopis say that. Oh, he was so attached to Sita that he didn't accept Sherpanika. They criticize him. So, I mean, the people we have to please Guru and Krishna, we have to please our acharyas. But we're never going to act in such a way that every other devotee is going to say, yes, you're doing the best thing. That is not going to happen. Forget it. What's that old story about the man and his son with the donkey? Right? So they're bringing a donkey, and people are saying, what fools they are. They're both walking, and they have a donkey. Somebody should sit on the donkey. So the man sits on the donkey, and then people say, I can't believe it, he's making his child walk while he sits on the donkey. Someone puts the child on the donkey. This is such bad etiquette. How can the son sit on the donkey while his father walks? And then they both sit on the donkey, and people say they're overburdening the poor beast. Jesus got criticized by the Jewish priests. It was the Jewish priest who went to the Roman Empire and said, this man is causing a disturbance. It was the Hindu priest who complained about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They went to the Qazi and they said, you know, sometimes we have some festivals where we have loud singing and dancing, but every day that's not right. And this is a time of the year when the Lord is sleeping and they're singing so loudly they're going to wake him up. That's what they said. That was the Hindu priest. In your own people. So you expect to have enmity from the outsiders. You don't expect to have enmity from your own people. But it happened to Jesus, happened to Lord Chaitanya. Happened to Srila Prabhupada with his god brothers. You know, Prabhupada took his Western devotees back to India. And he's visiting one of his godbrothers. His godbrothers had a brochure about all the activities of the Gaudiya Math. And Prabhupada's activities were not even listed. And Prabhupada said, you know, can you list what I'm doing? I'm also doing this for the Gaudiya Math. There was a time when Prabhupada still wanted to be part of the Gaudiya Math. After all, he gave up. He said, why aren't I also preaching for our Gurudev? Why aren't I listed here? Isn't this what our Guru Maharaj wanted? Didn't he want us to preach in the West? Didn't he want us to make Western devotees? Of course he did. He sent disciples to London for that very purpose. They didn't acknowledge him. They didn't validate him. Some did. But many didn't. They didn't help him. Please send me a brahmachari to help me. Nobody sent him. So, who are we that everybody should be validating our service? You follow? It's life. There are people who tell me, you know, what are you doing traveling and preaching when you're a woman? Why aren't you just home with your children baking cookies? And believe me, if I just stayed home with my children baking cookies, other people would criticize me. My children would eventually say, you know, like, you're healthy, mother. Why aren't you just staying here baking cookies? They say to me, get out and preach. Maybe because they don't want to take care of me all the time. But somebody would also criticize me. Why are you just staying home baking cookies? You follow? It's just what it is. Are you still not satisfied? Yes, what?
I'm satisfied. The issues sometimes come when these kind of directives are imposed from positions of authority, because that's a confusing thing.
Well, you're putting me in a very awkward position. And I'm not really sure that I want to deal with that sitting here with microphones and so forth. Well, I will just speak again in from the theoretical perspective that Prabhupada said we want independently thoughtful people, so forget the centralization and bureaucracy, and the art of management is to make sure that everybody, that there's a new challenge, that everyone can rise and meet, and we want there to be individual, spontaneous, and voluntary service. So, myself, having done doctoral studies in leadership, and have taken many doctoral courses in organizational structure and organizational management, and particularly of educational institutions, not for-profit corporate institutions. So I have some, at least theoretical knowledge of how a nonprofit educational institution should be organized in order to be most likely to achieve its goals. And we have the instructions from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati and Srila Prabhupada in this regard. So I've written blogs on this topic. You can go to my website and you can read about the different forms, different organizational forms and different organizational cultures. And there is a relationship between organizational form and organizational culture. There's a very famous architect, I think Sullivan, who said form follows function. If you want to fly, you have to have a wing. Arms aren't particularly good for that. You know, so whatever function you want to do, you should have a commensurate form. So if the function is to be a spiritual organization, an organization whose primary purpose is worship and education, if that is the primary function of ISKCON, which I believe, looking at the seven purposes of ISKCON, that it is, then our structure needs to be a Brahminical structure. Each of the varnas have their own type of organizational structure that they flourish in. It's not the same. And a spiritual organization needs a different kind of structure than a for-profit corporate organization. It just simply does. You know, if you're selling shoes, so you have a company, you sell shoes. Let's say you have a company here in New Zealand, and you're paying your employees. It's a market culture. We talked a little bit yesterday about market cultures versus social cultures. So you have a market culture, you're paying people hopefully what they're worth according to the predominant needs of the society. Most likely your employers are all Kiwis, or mostly Kiwis, and you're producing a tangible product. You're going to have a particular structure and a particular culture, and there's even varieties of corporate structures and corporate cultures. Now, we, on the other hand, do not have a tangible product that we are selling. I mean, yes, we sell books and japa beads, but the product we are selling is love of God, the most subtle and most intangible product. We don't have paid workers, and when we do pay our workers, we don't pay them what they're worth. Yes? We very, very rarely pay our members what they're worth, if we pay them at all. And in fact, Prabhupada encouraged us not to pay our members at all. So when we do have to pay them, we pay them much less, and we say, this is a service, Prabhu. It's a social norm rather than a market norm. So we have all more or less volunteers. We also have an international community. Even here, not everybody is a Kiwi. What to speak of if you look at our whole society? So we have a mix of nationalities and cultures. Different nationalities have different cultures. We have a volunteer force. We have an intangible product. So if we take the structure of a tangible product for profit, we're also not trying to make a profit. If you take it, the structure of a tangible product for profit company with paid workers who are mostly of one nationality and culture, and you try to copy that and then paste it on a spiritual organization with an intangible product, with volunteer workers and international culture, the result is that you will stifle the individual spontaneous and voluntary mood of the participants. And if they want to breathe, they'll have to work more and more outside of that corporate structure in order to survive. That will be the result. People will have to do more and more things in parallel. That they'll just have to, and they won't be able to breathe. So if we don't want people to do that, then we need to look at the structure of our own organization. And this is, looking at our structure like this is something specifically that Srila Prabhupada wanted our leaders to do. Now, there are people doing this. There are people in our movement who are in leadership roles, whether formal or informal, who are looking at these things and looking at them very deeply and very carefully and trying to have structures, at least in their areas of influence, that are in line with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's and Srila Prabhupada's instructions. There are people doing this. It's happening more and more and more. There's a growing awareness that what Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta said in this regard might be both true and important. Because I found many people will respond to this and say, well, yeah, but we can't do it. If we have a structure, it has to be bureaucratic. And I said, well, no, actually, this is my field of education, and you can have structures that are not bureaucratic. It's not necessary to be an organization. You can be a non-bureaucratic organization and still be organized. That organization and bureaucracy are not synonyms. But I find a lot of people think like that. They think the only way to be organized is bureaucratically and centralized. And as soon as you have a decentralized organic structure, you'll have anarchy. And you won't have an organization at all. So there's many people who've created an artificial equivalence. And that's a problem, because once people do that, it's hard to get them out of that. If you say give up bureaucracy, they think it means create chaos, and no matter what facts you put before them, it doesn't work very well. They're still stuck in that. But there are a growing number of people. In fact, I'm working with a group now that we hope to restore the preaching in New York City. And it's a group of people from all over the world, a lot of us who are native New Yorkers, and or people who really care about New York. And the devotee who's heading this up definitely understands organizational structure and organizational culture, and is trying to set this up in that way. And I'm also working with some devotees in Alachua who have some understanding of these principles, and one devotee in Mayapur who has an academy where he's training devotees to take leadership positions out of ISKCON in the world. And he's training them also in these principles. So I see that this is happening. And I think it's something that, at the very least, we can talk about in a non-critical way, in just as a factual thing. That it's something that we should be exploring as we develop. And another thing, which I was just talking to Luvani about yesterday, that I think is crucially important, and it's especially important for you, but it's important for anybody who has any kind of leadership role in a community, is to take some time and say, what's our vision for a Krishna-conscious society beyond the borders of ISKCON? So if all of Auckland were to be, like right now it's 2019, so let's give it 10 years, let's say 2029. So if we were all in 2029, and we looked around and Mahaprabhu's movement had taken over the greater Auckland area, or if you really want to be bold, the whole North Island, or if you really want to be bold, the whole of New Zealand. How many people live in New Zealand? What's your population? Anybody? 4.5 million. Small. So that's doable. I mean, when we were doing this in Slovenia, they said we've got 2 million. There's the joke, you know, that all the residents of Slovenia go to visit China, and all they had to do was rent one hotel. Say, if you have 4.5 million, you could actually envision the whole country being in Krishna consciousness, the whole country being in Mahaprabhu's movement in 10 years. And imagine you're actually there. Don't look forward to 2029. Imagine you're in 2029, that it's around you, and you're looking around. Is the whole of New Zealand one big collective commune? Is the whole of New Zealand one big collective commune run by the GBC? Is that the vision? Does anyone here think that that is the vision? Do you think that was Srila Prabhupada's vision? Should we talk about this? It's actually only 8:05. I'm really bad at it. But, you know, to look at this, and I find it most helpful to look at this first with the varnas. Do you want to do this for 5-10 minutes? Who would like to do this for 5? How many of you would like to do this for 5? Yeah, if you don't, you can leave. It's fine. I won't be offended. Class is over. But let's think right now. It's 2029. And why do I say mostly for you? Because you're preparing people to work in the world as devotees, yeah? That is your service. So let's pretend it's 2029. What's happening in the universities? Now, Mahaprabhu's movement has taken over New Zealand. We are the first Krishna-conscious country. What's happening in the universities? Anybody? Yes? There's courses on Krishna-conscious philosophy. Prabhupada said there'd be a department to study the soul. Right? There'd be degrees in what? You could get a PhD and a master's and bachelor's in what?
Pujari service.
What other degrees would be offered?
Self-sufficient
living. What else would be offered in universities?
Prasadam.
Also culinary science, but in terms of prasadam.
The art of kirtan.
The art of kirtan. So you could get a music degree that involved the art of kirtan. Do you know the Maharishi University, even now, you can get a PhD in consciousness studies? Did you know that? And we have degrees being offered through Mumbai University in consciousness studies, our Bhaktivedanta Institute. So there would be degrees in consciousness studies. Yes?
Would be that people who are studying biology or chemistry or economics or whatever, they're doing it for a higher purpose?
Yes, so they're studying by, and that's right in the first canto, isn't it? Where Prabhupada lists all those things. Biology, chemistry, sociology, psychology, when done for the service of the Lord, are all factually, what does he say? Hari Kirtan. That purport is a really good guide to what a society would look like, as is the Ishvashya purport in the Ishvapanishad. Okay, what would be happening in primary and secondary schools? We're not exhausting this, by the way. We'd be here for an hour. Kirtan, they would start every day with kirtan. What else would be happening in the primary and secondary schools? Prasadam. What else?
Krishna
conscious teachers. All of them? What kind of education would be happening there? The children would... What would people try to do for the children? Try to find out the children's what? Nature, and then try to direct that nature in Krishna's service. What would be happening in scientific research?
Seeing how Krishna is the origin of all of these phenomena in the world.
Using nature to understand Krishna. What would be happening in medicine? What else would be happening in medicine?
The medicine of the Holy Name.
What?
The medicine of the Holy Name.
The medicine of the Holy Name. I think there'd be investigation into sound, wouldn't there? The place of sound, the place of the Holy Name. What else would be happening in medicine?
How to leave the body.
How to leave the body. I like that. Yes. I noticed that when my mother was dying, that none of the doctors and none of the chaplains had any clue as to how to prepare people for death. Except to give them morphine and hold their hand and tell them it'll all be okay. You know, they didn't have a clue. That's very nice. What else would be happening in medicine?
Wouldn't be driven by the corporations.
Excellent. It would stay brahminical. It wouldn't be run by the vaishyas. Wouldn't be run as a for-profit. That's a good example of what happens when something that's supposed to be brahminical is run according to a Vaishya mentality, which is the same thing that I'm saying about ISKCON. Don't run ISKCON according to a Vaishya template. Look what happens. Anything else in medicine? Yeah, there'd be some exploration and use of the ancient systems of medicine. Okay, what would be happening in government? Let's look first at military. What would be happening in the military in New Zealand?
Training
More discussions of the Mahabharata. What else will be happening in the military?
Investigation to bring back the Brahmastra.
What? To bring back the Brahmastra. Woo! Yes. Okay, training the soldiers in dharma and morality and ethics. What kind of wars would the military fight?
Righteous
wars, and there'd be some consideration of righteous wars. Okay. What would be going on in the legislature? Do you think those would be implemented? Absolutely. Do you think those are being implemented right now in 2029? Do you think those are being implemented? Absolutely.
Or at least heavy taxing.
Okay, so there'd be some heavy tax on the sinful activities. And where do you think they would take place?
Close the slaughterhouses.
We'd close, okay, the government would close the slaughterhouses. Do you think they would allow some people to eat meat? Yes, under what conditions?
Without natural causes.
Huh?
Without natural causes.
With the animal dies of natural causes, what other meat eating do you think would be allowed?
Making them aware of what the scriptures say, if you do want to eat meat, what their responsibility
is. What their responsibility is, but what would they have to do if they want to eat meat? If the animal dies of natural causes, what else?
They have to do it themselves.
They'd have to do it by hunting, or if they want to, you know, they could get a license. Limited licenses and then be heavily taxed. Would there still be, you think, alcohol and marijuana?
Yeah.
Where would it be? Where would you have to go to get alcohol and marijuana?
Just in restricted places.
There'd be restricted places outside of the main population centers and heavily taxed. Yeah. Same with prostitution. That would still go on.
Liquor out of the grocery stores.
What?
Get the liquor out of the grocery stores,
yes. Maybe increase the age. What would the government spend tax money on? Huh? On yajna. So the government would make sure that there was tax money spent on religious observances. Oh, we forgot something. My God, we forgot one of the most important thing. I jumped to the Kshatriyas and I forgot the most important thing I wanted to talk about with the Brahmanas. What would be happening with religion? What's happening with religion in our Krishna conscious country? Is ISKCON the only religion? Are we the government? Are we the state church?
It's everybody.
It includes everybody. Okay. So there are no devotees who think that here in our Krishna conscious New Zealand that we're the state church, like the Catholic Church was in Europe, where we torture and persecute anybody who won't join our movement. Because that's what you have to do if you're the state church, by the way. It's the only way to do it. So what is the situation? Is everybody in New Zealand a Gaudiya Vaishnava?
No.
So what's happening? How is Mahaprabhu's movement now all over our country? What does that look like?
It's a universal standardized scientific understanding of what spirituality is about, and therefore we can see how God's soul is different.
Okay, I'd like you, I don't want to embarrass you, so I don't know how to do this without embarrassing you. You just said something which is the opposite of what you asked for 10 minutes ago. That's all I'm going to say. Just think about the words you used and think about how the words you used, you asked for something to be done to others which was exactly the opposite of what you wanted to be done to yourself. So would you like to try to word that a little differently?
Yeah.
And can you forgive me that I did that to you in front of everybody? I'm sorry. Thank you for appreciating it. No, definitely not.
Education programs that actually allow people to understand more of the universality of the science of spirituality and its application.
Very nice. Language matters, by the way. Language and sound matters. It's not inconsequential. So I'm thinking maybe now everyone's found bhakti in their own tradition. The Christians have remembered that Jesus said you should love God and that you should sing the name of God with praise, and the Christians are going around having Jesus Sankirtan, and the Jews have remembered that they had the Baal Shem Tov, the keeper of the good name, who went around in the street singing and dancing the name of God. And the Muslims even remember that Muhammad told them to praise the name of the Lord. And they're also singing and dancing in the name of Allah. And that the concept of love of God rather than bhakti and mukti pervades all the religions. Okay, going back to government. What's happening in the courts? Yeah.
Heavier penalties.
Heavier penalties.
Death penalty.
Huh?
Death penalty.
Death penalty, okay. Don't say that too loudly here in this country. There may be less people in the country. They may run away to the other countries that aren't Krishna conscious. Or we may be killing them with the death penalty, or how are we going to have less people? Huh? Less people in the court. Okay, all right, that's good. That's like, how we get less people? So less people in the court, fewer criminals. How Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a judge. What would the government be doing in terms of, what would they see their responsibility in terms of the country and the people? Protecting people's spiritual development. What else would the government be doing in terms of the country?
Ensure people utilize the human form of life.
All right. Other thoughts? Yes.
Encouraging simple living and high thinking.
Encouraging more simple living. Okay. Yes. Okay, really encouraging Brahminical education. What would they be doing for the environment? Protecting the environment from the corporate, from corporate excesses, right? Yes? What would they be doing for the workers?
Protecting
them
from exploitation.
Excellent, making sure people have their basic needs met without having to do Uber karma. They would be also making sure everyone's engaged according to their natures. Yes, I got it. What a brilliant thing you just said. They rethink how you understand the gross national product. How do you understand growth and prosperity? Okay, let's go to the field of resources. So we did the field of ideas, the field of government. Let's go to the field of resources. So how would agriculture, what's agriculture look like now in 2029? It's organic. What else?
Land is not being used for dairy farming.
No dairy farming.
What is it?
And I'm like, no dairy farming? I don't know if I want to come here in 10 years. What else is going on right now in agriculture? Yes?
More small and local.
What else?
More people employed in agriculture.
More people employed in agriculture. Okay. What else? Yes?
It's coming from a local rather than a
global product. Okay. People getting more local products, not so much importing of products. Okay. What about mining? Is there any mining in this country? What would happen? What's happening with mining now in 2029 under Mahaprabhu's movement? Banned. That's a very interesting idea. I'd like you to look at the altar right now. Do you see anything metal on the altar? That might be a problem for us to ban mining. You're not the only person who thinks that way, and that's why I asked. Because I've run into this many times, that devotees think mining is automatically uber karma. But if mining was automatically uber karma, how could you have traditional Vedic rites that use metal? And jewels? Do we use jewels? Yes? We use jewels, we use metal. What would happen with mining? Oh, okay, you wouldn't open it for other countries to come exploit. What else? Yes. I think we change some of the forms of mining to make them more humane and less ecologically devastating. Okay. And also, you know, what's happening now is that the earth is so happy that people are engaged in sankirtan, that she's starting to produce things more easily so people don't have to dig as deep. What else would be going on in this field of resources? What would happen with clothing? Yes?
More reusable.
More reusable. What else? Products would be more reusable, more natural fibers, more durable, right? Instead of a throwaway culture. And this idea of the gross national product, so those in the field of resources, by nature, people in the field of resources always want to expand. That's their nature. It says in the Bhagavatam, they're always thirsty, not literally for water. But people in the field of government, people in the field of resources are naturally always wanting to expand. They naturally want things bigger and better. And by redefining what makes things bigger and better, better in quality, better in health for the planet, people in the field of resources are naturally attracted to the opulence of virya. And the people in the field of resources produce the opulence of virya for the whole society. So to be expanding the health of the people, the health of the planet. So the emphasis in that area would be on constant growth of the health of the planet and constant growth of the health of the people and constant growth of the health of the animals rather than in constant growth just of cash. All right, what about the field of artistry? What's happening in the field of artistry? Yes. Can you be a little bit more specific? Can you be a little bit more specific? What does that look like? I'm looking around at the society. What do I see, hear, smell, taste, touch? As far as the field of artistry.
Celebration of Krishna's pastimes.
Celebration of Krishna's pastimes in?
Drama.
Dance. What else? What else? What else?
Painting.
Art, painting. What else?
Movies.
What else? Music. Nobody said music. What else are you going to see in the field of artistry? This is made by people in the field of artistry. What would you see? Yes. Get away from standardization, see? We get away from factories and standardization, and there would be more... There'd be more craftsmanship, wouldn't there? Or craftswomanship, I suppose. Craftspersonship. There would be people doing their work as a craft. And that would be true whether they're sanitation workers or whether they're furniture builders. What else would be happening in the field of artistry? Yeah.
Architecture.
Yes. Yes. It would all be it would be inspiring. Architecture, furniture, clothing design, everything. Would be inspiring people toward the spiritual, not just music and drama. People who are doing landscape architecture, people who are doing picking up the trash, would be doing it in what mood? Service, that this is Krishna's planet. Okay, I don't know if we're going to talk about the ashrams, because if we talk about the ashrams, everybody will leave. Talking about ashrams is not popular, even among devotees. So we'll probably, let's leave it at the varnas. But this kind of visioning, this is the kind of visioning that at least those of you in leadership positions need to be doing. Because we're not going to be able to figure out how to manage our little piece of New Zealand unless we understand how this piece fits into where we're going. If we want to train devotees, we want to build a community, we should see where what we're doing fits into the bigger picture. If we're just thinking about what's the goal and structure of our community, what's the goal and structure of our particular service within the community in isolation, we're not going to be heading toward the right thing. Does that make sense? Yes? Does that make sense to everybody? So Prabhupada's given us this vision for a perfect society. Everything we said, we got it all from Prabhupada, didn't we? Yes? It's all throughout his books and his lectures. Yes? So that's, if we, instead of just looking, how are we managing this farm, or how are we managing this temple, or how are we managing this school, or how are we managing this particular project, in an isolated way, to look, okay, where are we going? Where do we want to go? And let me do things now that are likely to go there, because Prabhupada's very clear that Lord Chaitanya's movement is going to take over the world. That is going to happen. And he's also very clear that whether or not ISKCON gets the credit for that is not certain. He's very clear on both points. These two things are not necessarily synonymous. So if we would like ISKCON to get the credit, then maybe we should align. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.